Everybody seems to be making lists of the best and worst films of the past year, but what about the most overrated ones? Well, we have invited Stephen Whitty, the chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and critic/columnist for the New York Star Ledger, and Peter Rayner, the Christian Science Monitor's film critic, to come by with their lists of the most overrated films. And I'm very pleased to welcome them to the show. Hi.
Afternoon.
By the way, we'd also like our listeners to get into the act. A number have already written in with comments to our show page on WNYC.org, and we'll reveal their choices for the most overrated as we go along. I have a feeling that there are a lot of the same films pop up again and again. And I throw this out to both of you, Stephen and Peter. Before we get into your choices, I wonder what you think qualifies a film as being overrated. Does it have to be a real stinker?
Well, I mean, to me, a film that's overrated is one that people seem to be rushing to anoint as some landmark in cinema, as a film that's going to last and be watched and rewatched 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 15, and the film maybe has some real flaws in it.
So it can be pretty good, but just not as good
not
as everybody's
great.
Saying it is.
Correct.
Like that yeah. happened with The English Patient, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of movies get so overhyped by the film companies or the publicists or by the feature story writers, newspaper magazine editors want to hype a movie. That sometimes impinges on the critical voice. You can't really separate the wheat from the chaff. But the films I chose are, for the most part, movies that got very good reviews overall. It's no fun in kicking a movie that got bad reviews anyway, you know.
So do you think that 2006 was as bad as 2007? Or does every year have a fair amount of overrated films?
Yeah, every year usually everyone waits for September, October, November, December, because that's when the supposed quality pictures, the Oscar contenders and so forth, come out. And the expectations are usually so high that if you don't have masterpiece after masterpiece week after week, you feel a letdown. That's sort of the case this year for me.
Well, a number of films have come out that the critics all seem to be unanimous in praise of. Do you think that they are as good as they're claiming?
Well, certainly in terms of the films that that the New York Film Critics Circle is honoring this year, I don't have any quarrels with giving a majority of prizes to No Country for Old Men. I thought that was a wonderful movie. I was a big fan of There Will Be Blood. That's another film that got some very good reviews. So I would certainly agree with some of those choices. I mean, there are other films that were lauded that I'm not as big a fan of.
Does it matter? The audience numbers are continuing to decline. And interestingly, DVD sales are down as well.
Yeah, well, that's, I think, partly because there are just alternative forms of entertainment now for the target audience, which is under 35, under 30. There's more of a need to just do other things besides watch movies, even at home now. So that is a little disconcerting.
But the movies that have done most poorly are the ones aimed at a more adult audience. The the sequels, which I think appeal to younger people, still tend to be the top-grossing films.
Well, I know what I hear from older readers are simply that the experience of going out to movies is something that many of them don't enjoy anymore, or the pictures that they do want to see. For example, Away From Her, the Sarah Polley film with Julie Christie, it takes so long for it to get to theaters near their homes that they just end up giving up and saying, well, I'll watch it on TV or DVD.
Or if it even gets to the theater near their home. And that's a big problem. If you go to most towns in America where they have this one multiplex, they're
right.
showing the hot movies. And
right.
those are usually aimed at kids, aren't they?
They are, and you'll find a 10-screen multiplex, and 6 screens will be showing Pirates of the Caribbean.
The top 10 grossing films last year were science fiction, fantasy, animation.
Yeah, well, that's the majority of the audience that turns
Sarah
out
Sarah Polley's in
now.
The wrong field.
Well, actually, she's making the new Star Wars picture.
Is she really?
No. You know, one thing that...
I almost had a heart attack.
That would be interesting if she did. The Iraq-themed movies this year did uniformly very badly. Redacted, Rendition, Valley mm-hmm. of Elah, and so forth.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's because the films overall weren't terribly good, but also because people don't want to see films that bum them out. You know, they're taken from the headlines when they get enough of that already in their lives and in the newspapers and in the news. A lot of right-wing pundits were using the failure of these films as some kind of vindication that, you know, America stands strong against these unpatriotic movies. But I think you could easily take the opposite lesson from it, that people are so disgusted with the war that they really don't want to see these movies unless they're so toweringly great, which they weren't.
Well, the movies that have gotten most of the acclaim have been kind of depressing. No Country for Old Men. For example, There Will Be Blood. These are not pleasant experiences.
Yeah, but they're not set in Iraq.
Well, Valley of Elah?
That was a total disaster.
Was it because?
Yeah, it made about 12 cents.
And yet it got some pretty good reviews.
It did. And I thought that, I thought some of those movies had things to recommend them. You know, I thought there were great performances in The Valley of Elah. There were things I liked about Grace Is Gone. But again, I think some of these films were just too depressing for people. It was a curious year because even when the movies weren't about Iraq, so many of them seemed to be about people losing a loved one, about an unexpected death, about a tragedy, about mourning, about grieving. It was a pretty bleak year at the pictures.
Well, there's also this other trend. I guess it's been with us for a while. Film critics don't have much clout anymore. There was a time when people would read the reviews and say, oh, I guess I'm not going to go to that. I don't know what happens now. A movie that can get the worst reviews possible and be the hottest movie in America for weeks anyway.
I think critics still have some clout when it comes to foreign language films and indie movies, small pictures. I think if enough critics get the word out on those films, it makes a difference at the box office. But increasingly for the big studio pictures, not only do critics have less clout, but the studios are beginning to circumvent critics altogether by not press screening.
Right, or showing them at the last
minute.
And what about stars? They seem to be less of a draw. Angelina Jolie, Tom Cruise, Brad Pitt didn't have big hit movies. The only guy who seemed to pull a movie along with him was Will Smith with I Am Legend.
This is true, but you know that was a Will Smith movie. You know, the people I think who turn out for Angelina Jolie movies, they want to see her in a cat suit running around with an automatic weapon. They don't want to see her.
How did Beowulf do? She was sort of digitized nude.
That's true. That's true. But you know, a lot of those people were not. Again, you know, Tom Cruise was in an Iraq picture. You know, Brad Pitt was in this very stately, epic, old-fashioned sort of Western. And by old-fashioned, I mean sort of 1970s Robert Altman Western.
Great reviews.
Yeah. And but again, it was a three-hour picture.
Of Jesse James.
Correct.
I think it's a healthy thing that stars don't have the same clout that they used to have. It means that movie makers now have to take more chances. Instead of just putting, you know, some big star in a movie to get it financed, now you can maybe, you know, take a little more of a chance.
Well, maybe it will also mean that the stars won't make as much money, and then a little bit of the money that they're not getting can go to
the writers, the
screenwriters, and the strike will be over. Just one more thing before we go to a break. I do want to point out that we did not confer, and yet we do have a number of films that we have agreed were overrated. Ratatouille, for example. So, Peter, why did it disappoint you?
Well, first of all, I just cannot get over the whole concept of a film that is mostly set in a high-end French restaurant that has rats running through it. I think it's just such an, you know, abhorrent concept. It's overlong. I think that the main human character in it isn't terribly interesting. And the animation, while it's certainly inventive, is not up to the earlier Pixar pictures.
So was part of the disappointment that Pixar had done so well in the past, and this...
I didn't like Cars much either. I think Pixar is a critic's darling as a company, and they tend to get a free pass on any movie they come out with, and I think this was the lesser of their films.
Yeah, I agree that I wasn't a big fan of Cars either. And now I am a fan of Brad Bird, who had made Ratatouille. Yeah. But I think if you compare that with his earlier movies, now The Iron Giant had a really interesting sort of look to it, this sort of 50s retro look, and it had a theme of, you know, rebellion against conformity. If you look at The Incredibles, which had this wonderful pop art feel, and again was about something and spoke about elitism and all sorts of interesting concepts. And this was a movie, it looked like a picture postcard France. The Eiffel Tower was in every shot, and the theme, you know, of being true to yourself, I mean, it could have been any of a dozen Disney movies.
It does have a marvelous hate letter to critics, though, in the Peter O'Toole performance.
That's right, which critics embraced. We loved that. So
a number of our listeners agreed, by the way. They wrote in listing Ratatouille. Personally, not only didn't like Ratatouille, I didn't like B-movie. I wondered who it was for, the 13-year-old I went with, the other adults in the audience, or just Jerry Seinfeld's closest friends who would get all the in-jokes.
Yeah, that makes Ratatouille look like Citizen Kane.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, that was rather dreadful.
My guests are Stephen Whitty, chair of the New York Film Critics Circle, 2007. He is also a critic and columnist for the New York Star-Ledger. And Peter Rayner, who's a critic with Christian Science Monitor. And we will be back with more of the overrated films from them and from you after this. And we're back with Peter Rayner of the Christian Science Monitor and Stephen Whitty of the New York Star-Ledger talking about the most overrated films of the past year. We all chose Michael Clayton, although a number of people in my staff thought it was the best acting they'd seen from George Clooney for quite a while. Why do you think it was overrated?
Well, I certainly think Clooney did a good job in it, and I like Tom Wilkinson, and I adore Tilda Swinton, who I thought gave the performance of the picture. But it seemed to me to go off on this sort of espionage thrill movie tangent with hired killers skulking around and all of these black vans and surveillance techniques that I thought the movie didn't really need. And it was as though the movie, which is about having the courage of your own convictions, didn't have the courage of its own convictions and wasn't willing to risk just being a good, solid drama.
Yeah, I think I'm not even that high on some of the acting. Mm-hmm. I think Clooney was quite good. But his role, it's kind of the Bogart cynic role updated, you know, to the present era. But it's so overloaded with formulaic stuff. I mean, he's a divorced single dad. He's got an alcoholic brother. He's got another brother who's a cop and a father who's a cop. You know, he's got a gambling problem. You know, what's left? And then, you know, all this stuff with the bomb-rigged cars and the hooded terrorists and the people, you know, skulking, as you say, in the alleyways and all of this stuff, which really...
And idealism, just, by the way. Lawyers being idealistic, that was part of it, and burning out because they're asked to do all these terrible things, like defend their clients.
Yeah, and the Tom Wilkinson character is sort of playing the Howard Beale role in Network, you know, the right. madness as sanity role. He really, you know, sees what no one else can see. And the ending, which I won't say for those who haven't seen the film, but it's such a pat wrap-up. Gives the lie to everything that came before.
So why did so many critics like it?
It's dark.
I think people really, you know, to talk about critical darlings, I think people are very fond of George Clooney. George Clooney is very fond of journalists, so I think there's sort of a mutual admiration that goes on there. I thought the movie was overrated and strangely, you know, almost misogynistic. I mean, there's only one female character really in the whole film and she's this utter fire-breathing, you know, villainous career woman. So it was sort of a strange picture for me for so many people to get behind.
Yeah.
To come up with a list of most overrated, you have to read other critics. Do you read a lot of other critics?
I do to a fair extent. I there's so many works of great literature I still have to catch up with that I've sort of, you know, rationed what I do. But some of the websites have praises of the critics and you know, even just looking at the ads, you can often see who likes what.
Well, in the old days, everybody used to go to screening rooms. There's still a fair amount of that. But critics more and more are watching these films on DVDs, so they're seeing it themselves and they're not having little chats in the elevator as they they leave.
Well, there used to be this thing, in, you know, with critic screenings where even in silence you could sort of, you know, Pauline Kael would give a huge sigh. And
oh, she did worse than that. I sat next to her once to a film where she said, oh, no, not this.
Right. There's all of that, you know, and John Simon would do his number and, you know, you'd kind of have to interpret all of this. But studios still pretty much show their movies only in theaters. It's the DVDs for smaller pictures.
Has a review ever changed your mind about something? You know, you had one reaction, then you realized that this other person did see things that you had missed?
I'm sure there are always, you know, small things that people write about that I thought, oh, gosh, I never thought of that, or I had not seen that before. I can't say I've read a review that made me change my opinion, but I think we're a fairly obstinate bunch anyway.
We've seen a lot more documentaries released as feature films. Peter, you rank Sicko as being overrated. Do you like Michael Moore in general?
I like Michael Moore, you know, with an explanation, as they say in Traffic Court. You know, I think that he chooses inflammatory subjects that are hot-button issues that are worth making movies about. And then I think he often sabotages his own best efforts. And in the case of Sicko, I thought it's obviously a great subject to make a movie about. But you get the feeling from this movie that he's the only one in America who's talking about this issue. He doesn't interview anybody else, really, who is trying to do anything, you know, any lawmakers particularly. And the whole section where he goes to Cuba, I thought, was so misbegotten. The idea that you would take sort of gravely ill people on this wild goose chase to Guantanamo, knowing that they're not even going to get through, just for a funny comic moment, I thought was fairly disgraceful.
I think that's the point where that movie just went off the rails when they went to Cuba, because I had been with it up until that point.
You put In the Shadow of the Moon on your list, Stephen.
Right. Now, some people love that movie. I found it just so... It was just starry-eyed about NASA and the whole space program and this sort of wonderment about what we were able to accomplish. And I just couldn't quite go along for that ride. I just didn't find it all that amazing. And I also found it curious that it left out, you know, in its eagerness to cheerlead the NASA program, never even mentioned the Soyuz hookup that we had with the Soviet Union, which was a really interesting moment in both time and sort of the thawing of the Cold War. So no, that wasn't a picture that I was particularly fond of.
A number of our listeners included Knocked Up. Did you feel it was overrated? Is it my sense about Knocked Up and it was that we so want to have a comedy that we can really have some big laughs from, that we're willing to overlook an awful lot of stuff that we probably shouldn't overlook.
I agree with that. I had a good time at it, but I did feel that the film was kind of split between being this, you know, Judd Apatow yacht fest and actually a very straight-laced, very traditional movie. It's one of the most family-values movies of the year.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, I think we are so desperate to have a comedy speak to us that we're willing to put up with an awful lot of sloppy filmmaking and sort of by-the-book plotting.
Well, you included Charlie Wilson's War, Stephen.
Right.
I would have, but I didn't think that the critics liked it all that much. A number of listeners have said awful things about it. Why do you think... Well, first of all, why did you think it was overrated?
Well, I did see some reviews that were gushing about it. I didn't. I thought Philip Seymour Hoffman was wonderful in it. I haven't seen him give a bad performance all year, and he's given three or four. But the tone seemed really odd to me. It seemed very sort of flip and very light, and I just didn't think that matched the material at all.
A listener named Drew said that it had the emotional impact of a romantic comedy and the intrigue of a trip to the dry cleaners.
Yeah, for me, it was sort of like a pretty good pilot for a political sitcom.
Well, it was smirky. That's what bothered me. It was all full of cheap ironies.
Yeah.
And it was kind of easy. It was like shooting fish in a barrel.
It was. Well, it's funny. The movie starts with this sleazy character pitching the idea for a nighttime soap opera set in Washington, D.C. And to me, Charlie Wilson's War played like the pilot.
What about Atonement? This is a movie that's got really mixed reviews.
That's not on my list, but I think that's a pretty mixed bag. I was with it for about the first 50 minutes. When it breaks out of the family estate, I thought it became rather diffuse and less interesting. And the girl who plays, you know, the the young
the adolescent
is marvelous. Yes. And she drops out of the movie at that point. I think it's a pretty good stab at a very difficult book to adapt, though.
I had a real problem with the ending. I don't want to give away too much, but Vanessa Redgrave is at a talk show.
Mm-hmm.
And I've, beyond all of my other misgivings about the film, I thought, why don't they just simply have her at the talk show instead of having all of these flashbacks and, you know, as though they don't trust the audience to get it.
Right.
She's saying these really powerful things. It would have been so much more effective.
Yeah, it would have been.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, I mean, that's a very literary book that was, I think, turned into a fairly cold film.
Peter, you included The Savages and American Gangster.
Yeah, The Savages, I think, has a marvelous performance from Philip Seymour Hoffman. I think Laura Linney is way over the top. But it's a difficult subject. It's a painful subject to make a movie about. And instead of coalescing the pain and the comedy, it seems to sort of alternate between being kind of funny, almost flip, and being serious. And to me, that's really not the way to do this subject. You know, Chekhov did a pretty good job of making, you know, sad comedies.
Mm-hmm.
But I think here it's a much more flapdoodle, facile way to do it.
Do you make up lists of underrated movies?
Yeah.
What did you feel were the most underrated films of the year?
There was a terrific little picture that hardly anybody saw called Outsourced. About a guy who, you know, goes to India to work with the companies there and sort of becomes part of the lifestyle. There's, I don't know if it was underrated, but the Iranian picture Offside, I thought was just a marvelous movie that not nearly enough people saw.
Yeah, Offside is definitely one that I don't think enough people saw. There was another Iranian film, The Willow Tree, which I liked very much, that not many people saw.
But, you know, I think any film with subtitles these days is not going to do well, whereas in New York, I remember we just waited for the latest Italian film or French film.
Right. Yeah.
So things have changed a lot over the years.
Color Me Kubrick was a terrific little
that
picture
was.
With the wonderful performance by John Malkovich that nobody saw.
And a movie that was overlooked by just about all the critics groups, I would say, is The Diving Bell and the Butterfly, which I really liked and I thought had some wonderful performances in it.
Yeah.
Do you think that the writer's strike is going to have a lasting impact on next year's films?
Well,
or everything's just going to come out in December?
I think probably a lot of stuff is already in the hopper. I certainly hope the strike doesn't last that long. If what you're saying is true, Lenny, then that means the strike is going to be on for at least 6 months.
Yeah. 5 months last time.
Yeah.
Well, we've run out of time, but thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Peter Rayner of the Christian Science Monitor and Stephen Whitty of the Newark Star-Ledger. We've been talking about the most overrated films of the year. We left out a few, but we did pretty good. On tomorrow's show, a travel writer reveals some of the trade secrets that are fiercely guarded by the travel industry. Also, David Morse and Jim Norton on playing brothers in the new Conor McPherson play, The Seafarer. I'll talk to a doctor who developed an innovative way of treating breast cancer after his wife was diagnosed with it. Plus, the latest underreported. The Leonard LoPage Show is produced by Sarah English, Blakeney Schick, and Scott Goldberg. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. We had help today from Stephen Valentino and Rory Bernstein. Debbie Daughtry was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard LoPage, your host. We'll see you tomorrow.